If you want to make changes in your life or do or achieve something you've never done before, do you know how to use the power of your brain to make those things a reality? This is part two of a two-part interview that will give you some new keys to help you do or accomplish something, especially if you didn't think you could. Welcome to the Astound Yourself podcast. I'm your host, Sally Saxon, and I am back today again with Doug Bench, a former science teacher, a former lawyer, a former judge. He's an author and speaker on topics relating to the latest brain science research that help us to increase and enhance our performance in anything that we choose, you know, to do. And so in the previous episode, we got started on this topic of why it's important to learn about brain science and how it can help us in our lives. And we start getting into this process of, you know, how the brain actually works and what we can do to accomplish a lot more than we think we can. So welcome back to the Astound Yourself podcast, Doug Bench. Appreciate having you back.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be back with you again and excited to be with you again.
Well, this is such fascinating material. I absolutely love it. And as I mentioned in the previous episode, you know, when I first met you several years ago, I kind of devoured your materials. I was constantly listening to the CDs, you know, in the car, and reading your written materials, and that really helped to spark my interest in this subject. And so, you know, I'm just so honored and glad that you're able to be here and share some of your, you know, expertise. And again, I want to encourage people to listen to Doug's new podcast, Brain Training for Seniors, and we'll have the links in the show notes. That he just started that in January, but I think you've already got about 19 episodes or so already.
Yes, we do. We put up two a week. I don't know how long I can hold out doing that, but hopefully a long time because there's a lot of information.
Yeah, that's a lot. So so those resources are there, you know, for you, and as well as on his website, a lot of free resources. And really, I cannot encourage everyone strongly enough to start learning about this because it can change your life in so many ways. And it's something you have control over, you know, because it all starts with your thoughts, you know, and what you want to see show up in your life. Okay, last time we were talking about this process of making new connections in our brain and by having what you called the important list of things that we want in life. What are the most important things that we actually want that are not currently in our life? And how do we use our brain to start seeing those things show up in our life? How to make them happen? You know, let's start with taking a goal, any goal that somebody may have, and they start focusing on that. And let's pick it up from there. How does that process actually work? What do we need to do to make that goal a reality?
Well, it all starts with what we mentioned in the last podcast, which is neuroplasticity, brain plasticity, which the scientists have found, which says, and I quote, if you stimulate your brain, no matter what your age, which is my favorite part, if you stimulate your brain, no matter what your age, your brain will form new DSP connections. In fact, I saw a brain imaging video of that exact process where these new connections were reaching across and connecting with other brain cells. It was astounding to see it. It was real. But if you stimulate your brain, no matter what your age, your brain will form more DSP connections. And as we talked about last time, the number of new connections you can form is a number incomprehensible, 6 million miles of zeros after a one. So the first part of that is if you stimulate your brain. Well, how the heck do you stimulate your brain? That's thinking. That's thoughts. And the scientists have learned there's if we change our thoughts and change how we're thinking, the possibilities are endless. And I was talking about in the last podcast with you about how when I got a Chevy Tahoe, I started seeing Chevy Tahoes everywhere. And I wanted to know how this process worked in the brain. And doing the reading of all the research, here's what we found out. We all have in our brain something called the reticular activating system, RAS for short, RAS, I call it. What happens in a reticular activating system, it has two major functions. One, when a neuron fires in your brain, I like to picture the RAS, which, by the way, is not one spot in the brain. It's not like the hippocampus, which is an exact organ in the brain. The RAS is a connection of what I call neurodes, which is a combination of neurons that fire together. In the brain. That's the RAS, and it has two major functions. One, every impulse you fire in your brain, whether it's coming from sight, from sound, from hearing, from thoughts, from touch, from smell, or just thinking, it has to go through the RAS. And I like to call it like a toll booth. Here comes a neuron pattern into the brain from some outside source or from the prefrontal cortex thinking, and it has to stop at the toll booth, and the RAS is the toll booth, and the RA says, okay, what kind of an impulse do I see? Oh, that's sight. Well, sight, then you go straight ahead all the way to the back, the occipital lobe, that's where you'll be interpreted. And every impulse that comes through the brain, the RAS has to do that instantaneously. Is this sound? Well, that has to go over here to the temporal lobe. A thought, that has to go up here to the prefrontal cortex. That's main function number one of the RAS. Function number two, which is extremely important, the RAS, when it sees an impulse, determines automatically, God created this capacity in the brain, to determine whether or not that thought or impulse or sight or sound is important to us. Is it something that we have thought about a lot over the last 30 days? I call it being on the important list that's hanging on the wall in the toll booth. And the RAS, we'll call him Mario, sitting there going, oh, you're a really important impulse. Like maybe the finger is on a hot stove and the impulse of that heat is coming into the brain. That's on your important list, things that hurt you. So your RAS immediately sends that to your conscious brain for interpretation. If it's not on your important list, it's something that's not thought about by you in the last 30 days, hardly at all, then that goes to your non-conscious brain for storage and maybe later recall. That's your Nancy, I like to call it, your non-conscious brain. So the goal is, Sally, to get things onto your RAS important list so that you are automating your thinking about a goal. So if you pick a goal, whatever it is, and how you formulate a goal, I'm learning from the brain science, is extremely important. How you write that down, how you picture it in your brain is extremely important. You have to do it in a very particular way to have your brain RAS send it to your important part of your brain for interpretation immediately. Like I had, when I first got that Tahoe, I was thinking about that Tahoe every day. Before I bought it, after I bought it, I was thinking about it every day, how much it cost me, how much mileage I'm getting, how's come there's so many other Chevy Tahoes everywhere? That's because I was thinking about it in the past 30 days a lot. And my automatic RAS, the RAS is in the automated portion of your brain, sees a Chevy Tahoe coming down the road the other way. I might be singing a song on my radio, not paying any attention to what kind of car is coming down the road. But my RAS knocks on my conscious brain with that impulse because my RAS knows that Chevy Tahoes are important to me. At least back then they were.
Yes. So there's kind of like an antenna that's sort of on the lookout for whatever is on your important list. It's kind of scouting and searching for those things that you say are important to you. Is that correct?
Yes. And it does so automatically, Sally. That's the amazing part. You can be consciously taking a test or doing a math problem or cleaning out the refrigerator. It doesn't matter. If your RAS knows it's on your important list and it's anywhere in your field of thoughts, sight, sound, touch, hearing, anything, it'll put it on your important list and it'll call your attention to it when that impulse comes through the toll booth. Yeah, it's amazing. It's absolutely amazing.
Okay, so now we have a goal or something that we want that's on our important list. You know, what happens from there? In terms of those connections being made and that process?
One of the things that the scientists have learned about neuroplasticity and brain plasticity is that the more emotional you are, where neurotransmitters are being released, hormones are being released, when you are very emotional, and these neurotransmitters and hormones in the brain, the scientists have learned, when you're very emotional, when you're learning something new, putting something on your important list, the scientists have learned that it will create many more new connections in your brain than when you're not emotional. They will be stronger connections. They will last longer. And their firing threshold will be lowered, meaning they'll much more easily be recalled by your RAS to create thoughts in your conscious brain about it. The way I related this, and it made total sense to me, is because I'm an old fart. In 1963, on November 22nd, I can tell you, if you're my age, you know what happened on November 22nd, 1963, in Dallas, Texas, when our president was shot and killed. I can tell you what steps I was walking up to go to my accounting class at the University of Cincinnati. I can tell you what shoes I had on. I can tell you what shirt I had on. How's that possible? I couldn't tell you what I had for lunch that day or what I had for breakfast that day or what time I got up or anything else, but I can tell you exactly where I was when a fellow student came and said, classes are canceled, Doug, the president's been assassinated.
And so that's all a function of the emotional impact of certain events that happened at a certain time that are associated with the memories of, you know, where you were, what you were doing right at that time.
And those emotions create stronger connections, longer lasting connections, more of them. So, for example, let's say you were a college student and you had an exam coming up. It would be a marvelous idea that when you study for that exam, you get yourself in a highly charged emotional state because your brain's going to form more connections about whatever it is you're putting into your brain for the exam.
How do we do that? How do we stir up those emotions?
Well, I call it, in my training, I call it learning to trigger a thunderstorm. You can create emotions. Number one, think about an event in your past that was extremely emotional. When JFK was assassinated, when I walked my daughter down the aisle at her wedding, when I was told my father was killed in a car accident. Or you know what else brings up these emotions? Music. Mm-hmm. I just talked about it in my last podcast. My wife and I went to Jacksonville, or I'm sorry, St. Augustine, to a concert by the band Foreigner. Now, the band Foreigner was a rock band from way back in the 70s and 80s, and their music has been around. I've got them on my playlist when I travel around to give speeches or seminars or whatever. I listen to them. So we went to see them in person, and I wasn't prepared for what happened to me. Back when that stuff was number one hits back in the late 70s, early 80s, when they sang a different song, it churned all these emotions and reignited the neuron connections for those emotions from the events that occurred back when I was that age. Meaning those memories are stored, but there are ways, including emotion, to refire them. So there's we have a 14-year-old granddaughter who is a Swiftie, okay? She loves Taylor Swift. And she's always trying to get Grandpa to listen to Taylor Swift music. I've never listened to Taylor Swift. Well, one day, just for the heck of it, I downloaded a Taylor Swift song onto my playlist. Never Grow Up is the name of the song. And I was driving to one of my seminars out of town, and I said, well, I'm just going to play it. Don't play that song, Sally. Especially don't listen to the words. I have two daughters, and that song is about a daughter growing up. And I'm driving down Interstate 4, and I start crying listening to that song. So I'm saying to myself, oh, man, I got to learn something new. I got to set a new goal right now because I am so emotionally charged. You can get yourself in a highly charged emotional state and then go study for the test, then go set your goal, then go write out your affirmations that we haven't talked about yet, but your affirmations will certainly, and I call them interstates, what you say to yourself inside, or better yet, say to yourself in front of a mirror. Doug, why in front of a mirror? Because the scientists have learned that if you see yourself saying a lie, that's very emotional. What do you mean saying a lie? Because you haven't reached your goal yet. You're in front of a mirror repeating what your goal is. For example, we had one of our students, brain training students, was about 180 pounds overweight. And he came up with an interstate in front of a mirror. He took his shirt off and he stood in front of that mirror every day, 3 to 5 times a day for 30 days. Takes about 30 days to create enough new neuron connections in the brain to make it a habit or make it to your important list. He came up with an interstate that said, I am fit and thin and eat healthy foods. Or eat just healthy foods, I think he said. Now, he weighed over 300 pounds. And he's standing in front of a mirror with his rolls of fat exposed, telling himself a lie. I'm fit and thin. His conscious brain knows it's a lie. His non-conscious brain believes it. And that's very, very emotional that he's hearing himself lie. Perfect way to create the energy to change your thoughts by saying your interstates in front of a mirror and your goals.
Yeah.
But you got to formulate them. You got to formulate them, Sally. You know this. You got to formulate them in what I call a positive, positive way. Mm. Let's say you have a toddler, 3 years old, and they want a glass of milk. So you pour them a glass of milk. Oh, whoops. You poured it too full. So you say to Jimmy, Jimmy, whatever you do, don't spill the milk. Mm. Now, the scientists have learned that what fires in our non-conscious brain that we're not aware of is fired in pictures. And so if you send, and remember, your non-conscious brain is 5/6 of your thinking. It's the 500-pound gorilla. And it's not the thinking you're aware of. That's in your conscious brain. So if you say, Jimmy, whatever you do, don't spill the milk. The picture in 5/6 of your brain is a perfect picture of spilling the milk and thinking that's what you want it to do. And what are the chances? About 5 out of 6 that Jimmy's going to spill the milk. You don't want to say it in what I call a negative, positive way. You want to say your interstates in a positive, positive way. Jimmy, that's a full glass of milk. So hold it with two hands and drink it slowly till you can see the bottom of the glass. Those are all positive pictures, not a negative positive. Our student, he lost 165 pounds, by the way, by simply over and over saying in front of a mirror, I am fit and thin and eat healthy foods. And it changed his thoughts. It changed his automated thoughts. And I don't remember. I think it was like over a 9 month or 10 month period. He lost 165 pounds.
Well, I think we can all learn from that example, because most of us, you know, deal with that issue to one extent or another. So that's a powerful, you know, application of what you're teaching us.
Yeah, we have a program called Don't You Dare Diet. You know, all diets work, but about 95% of people do not persist on a diet. Well, to persist on a diet, you got to change your thoughts. Mm-hmm. That will change your eating habits. You got to change your thoughts first. Yeah.
Yeah. And Doug, what about this concept that your non-conscious brain really cannot tell the difference between, you know, what's actually happening and what you're thinking?
You know, I've asked the Lord this question a lot. Why did you do that? Why is 5/6 of the power of our brain in the non-conscious level? Honest answer, I don't know the answer yet to why that is. I do know how it helps us, and it helps us in a marvelous way. Every thought you've ever had, ever, is perfectly stored in the brain. The research has shown this. They have interviewed and studied bricklayers that were taking a historic building down brick by brick and numbering every brick and rebuilding it somewhere else. They interviewed these bricklayers like 10 years later under hypnosis and asked them, where's brick number 1,266? Now, he hadn't thought about that in 10 years, but it's perfectly stored in his brain because he exactly told them where that brick was, which the brain is extremely powerful. And I think it's to help us. I'm not sure why the Lord did that, but it certainly is a powerful tool for us. That 5/6 of our brain has stored every memory we've ever had. And at the conscious level, we might be trying to make a decision, maybe about a goal or a family decision, about a child or something. And we want our brain to recall all the good memories that are somewhere stored. And now they're saying it's not even all stored, Sally, in the brain. Some of it may be stored at the gut level. Literally, we may have stored memories in our gut. It gives new meaning to the expression, a gut sense, you know?
Yeah. And actually, isn't the gut kind of known as the second brain?
Yes.
Yeah. So it just goes to show like how phenomenal the human body is and what it can do. And when people start studying, not just the brain, but you know, the rest of the body and how it works, boy, we can learn a whole lot that will help us even to get better health and come into, you know, just even greater mental clarity. And, you know, as well as what you're teaching us about how the brain works, how we can use our brain to accomplish things we didn't think we could do. And
you're absolutely right. Many of the memories that we're talking about may be stored at the gut level. For example, one of the things we teach is if you write down your goals and your interstates, if you run your finger over that sentence, if you have memory stored somewhere, non-consciously, that has some memories that says, no, you don't know how to do that yet, it will send that information to your conscious level. So you got to be on the lookout for that because it may try to stop you from doing something. Your non-conscious brain can't speak. So it takes everything you have stored there as real And if it tries to get through to your conscious brain with information, but you're doing something else, it gets a busy signal, it will speak to your brain through your body. I had this experience several years ago. I wanted to increase and scale up my speaking business, more paid speaking engagements. And so I set that goal. And one of the things I like to do is create a future memory, create a memory that's on a date in the future. And I try to transport myself to that date. And here's what I'm doing on this day. And on this day, I'm giving a speech. And I look at my schedule, and I've got 12 more paid speaking engagements in the next 6 months. And I am very happy. And I look out into the pasture and see the horses grazing beautifully, because I am so happy that I have reached my goal of booking an additional 12 speeches. Well, I wrote down that future memory, and I ran my index finger over that future memory, and I got to the part where it said, and I've booked 12 additional paid speaking engagements. My face got flush. Like it gets when you get embarrassed. That was my non-conscious brain saying to me, Doug, you don't know how to book paid speaking engagements. You know what? I tried to do it again in the same sentence. My face got flushed. So I highlighted that sentence. And after I got done going through that written memory, future memory, I sat down with the part of it that sent emotion to my brain and made my face flush. I had to get a course on how to book speaking engagements. And I took that course. And then I went back to review that goal. No flush face when I got to that line. Learn how the brain works, man. And you can make yours work really better.
Yeah. So the first part of this process is deciding what it is you want in life that you don't currently have in your life, whether it's a personal relationship goal, a financial goal, a career goal, whatever it is, getting clarity on that. And so that would be like the first thing.
And you've got to formulate it in the, as we mentioned, the positive way.
Okay.
Down and in your head, both. You got to make it a positive, not a negative positive.
Right. Okay.
You don't want.
Yeah. So you want to get that on your important list. So it's something you need to focus on throughout the day, or it's several times during the day, and writing it down.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh my. Writing it down is extremely important.
Yeah.
Touch. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very, very important.
And then people can also do like you were suggesting with the guy who wanted to lose all that extra weight. He stood in front of the mirror and he actually spoke out, that future reality for him.
Maybe could do a future podcast on it, but there are very specific science-based rules for goal setting. You might have a fuzzy goal. I want to have a better marriage. Well, what the heck does that mean?
That's kind of vague.
That's not a goal.
Yeah.
You can be very, very specific. I remember my oldest daughter, husband, who I dearly love, I went to their new house when he was just maybe 2 or 3 years out of college. And I said, Tim, what's your goal? He said, well, I want to be a good father. Stop. What does that mean? What is a good father? And then he says, I want to get a nice house for our family. Well, tell me about that house. Do you have tile roof or you have shingle roof? How many windows are in the front? Is it two stories? Is it one story? You got to be very specific with your goals. You got to be very specific in telling your brain what you want.
Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah. So getting that clarity about the specifics and then the different ways of focusing on that, in your thoughts, writing it down, speaking it out. And then adding the emotion to it, as you were describing. And so now the emotion part of it is you gave some examples of how to kind of stir up the emotions using music or things. But shouldn't that be like a something that evokes a positive emotion rather than a sad emotion?
Absolutely. Walking my daughter down the aisle at her wedding, that was tremendous. Sometimes I'll use a past success, past memory that was a very successful event that will trigger emotion. Back in my science teaching days, I was also a coach, and my final year, our track team went undefeated for the year, and we got the state trophy. Seeing my wife and my daughter standing beside a trophy that was taller than my daughter, I pull that photograph out. All those wonderful positive emotions come roaring back, and then you use it towards your goal. Yeah, you're right. Absolutely. It can be a positive.
Yeah. So let me ask you this, because I've heard this elsewhere, where you can kind of create sort of a theater in your mind and picture yourself in like the most ideal setting you would love to be in. Like for me, it's kind of like a cabin on a lake, and with a lot of trees around, just very peaceful, beautiful, that kind of thing. I just love that kind of atmosphere. You know, I envision, you know, what the room is that I'm in. I'm sitting down and seeing myself in that situation. So if I am thinking about and writing down my goal, I want my specific clear goal that I want to achieve, something I want to have in my life, and then start maybe thinking of some positive things or listening to some music that really starts stirring the emotion. You know, would that be like a good suggestion of how to go about doing this?
Yes. And I call it creating a future success scene. Or a future memory, where I teach, sit down in a chair, pick a date in the future, 1 year, 2 year, 5 years, where are you? And it's funny you said in a cabin by a lake. You know where mine is? Mine, in my mind, is up near Bryson City, North Carolina, Fontana Lake, on the lake, a cabin, a log cabin. And I can tell you everything about that log cabin. I don't have it yet, but I will. And that's, I'm sitting there in my soft leather chair. I've got a sweatshirt on because it's kind of chilly. It's in the mountains. And I look out over the lake, which is calm today.
And so that's the power of our brain, where we can choose, you know, that kind of atmosphere, even if we're not physically in that. But again, going back to the concept that our non-conscious brain does not know the difference between, you know, whether something is actually happening or we're just imagining it or thinking it, you know, in our brain. So, you know, that to me, that was one of the most powerful concepts that helps deal with the like fake it till you make it kind of, you know, objection that some people raise.
It's why a scary movie seems to be scary. And if you were in a scary movie and you were wired up, your galvanic skin response, your pores would open up, you'd start perspiring, your heart rate would go up, your breathing rate would go up. Well, it's just a movie.
Yeah.
Your conscious brain knows it's just a movie, but 5-6 of your brain, your non-conscious brain, thinks it's real.
Yeah.
Think with a sad movie or even a happy movie, you think it's real. That may be the very answer of why God made us that way. So we can concentrate on those positive things that seem to be real, and we can make them real.
Right. Yeah. And so the key is we have to do these kinds of exercises for at least a certain period of time in order for the connections to be sufficiently made in our brain. Is, you know, maybe you could just take a minute or so to explain that connection where we need to. I always kind of think of it like Evel Knievel, you know, if he's on his motorcycle and he's going to do one of his daredevil stunts and, you know, start his motorcycle way back and then starts speeding up to go up a ramp that's going to catapult him over a whole bunch of trucks or cars or something, onto another ramp, much further down where he makes his landing. He needs to get up a certain momentum, build a momentum and energy so that his motorcycle will carry him over that gap where all the trucks and whatever things are below, between the two ramps that he has set up, so that he can, close that gap successfully
or
jump over that gap successfully and come down on the other side.
That's a pretty good analogy to exactly what happens in the brain. When a new DSP connection reaches out to connect with another neuron, creating a memory, creating a thought, where it connects with another neuron, it really doesn't connect. There's a gap there. It's called the synaptic gap. And there's a reason for that. There's lots of reasons for that. We could spend probably 4 hours talking about why that's there. But the scientists have learned, number one, you have to be well hydrated, because that fluid between one side, one neuron, and the other neuron over the synaptic gap, that fluid is mostly water. And if you're dehydrated, not very many exploded neurotransmitters get across that gap. So, and the more emotional you are, the easier something will carry across that gap. And if it won't cross that gap, let's say you're having a thought and you're dehydrated, you're going to be operating on a less than 50% of the synapses that get across that gap because you're dehydrated. So you want to make sure you're fully hydrated. And there's many ways to bridge that gap. What fires across there, they used to think it was electricity. Now they know with the new brain imaging equipment, it's not. It's a chemical explosion that carries the neurotransmitters across. And the hormones and the neurotransmitters that are released when we're highly emotionally charged aid that process of those chemicals successfully Evel Knieveling across the synaptic gap. Yeah.
Well, and that's another powerful thing, especially if, the older we get, the less we tend to hydrate. And yeah. I know that for seniors, dehydration is really a major issue that affects all the processes in your body. But I hadn't really thought of it in terms of what we were just talking about, that, and because that'll affect your memory and everything else. And we're not talking about coffee or soft drinks or beer or wine. We're talking about water, filtered water, healthy water. The other things really don't count for purposes of hydration.
In fact, they go the other way. Caffeine hydrates.
Yeah.
And I teach continuing education of Florida home builders. And I pound this into especially roofers, where they've got an employee up at 130, 140 degrees. And do they have their water up there? They better have their water up there, because you can get over 50% dehydrated when it's 93 degrees out. This was a study done here in Florida. When it's 93 degrees out, you can get dehydrated up to 50% in just a matter of 15 to 16 minutes.
Whoa.
And then what happens is, if you're that dehydrated, not all of the information gets across the synaptic gaps. Well, if you're a roofer standing on a pitched roof, you want all of the information coming from your feet to get to your brain and across the synaptic gaps to send messages back down to keep you balanced. Otherwise, you're coming off the roof. So you have got to stay fully hydrated. In that case, a life or death situation for you and I, for our goal setting, and are striving to reach those goals. We got to be fully hydrated. And there are lots of ways to get the neurotransmitters, chemicals across that synaptic gap.
Right.
One more thought. You know how far that gap is? If we're talking about one synapse to the next, we've got over 100 billion neurons. And are you ready for this? Each neuron can have 10,000 or more connections to other neurons. So if you want to know how many synaptic gaps there are in your brain right now, you got to multiply those numbers together. That's an astronomical number of synaptic gaps. So you want to keep them fully hydrated. And the distance across just one synaptic gap, relative to the size of the neurons, that distance is greater than the distance from the Earth to the moon, relatively speaking. So that's a big journey. So you better help those chemicals get across that gap. They're firing by the millions every second.
Right.
And if you're dehydrated, some of them drop down and die and don't get across there.
Wow. And so those are some very just practical, simple things that anybody could do. And it really comes down to, you know, are we willing to do what it takes? I mean, it's not much, but, you know, are we willing to do our part? Things that are within our control, you know, just drinking the water, you know, focusing on our thoughts, setting a clear goal, you know, so many things that will enable us to do things we never thought we could do. And part of that is not just for us to get the satisfaction and reward ourselves for being able to do things or achieve things that we never thought we could, but also how that enables us to impact the lives of others and to help others and benefit others. I mean, that's what it's really all about, you know. Because if we're not doing that, then, you know, why are we living? Why are we living? You know, we have a role to play in a bigger picture of things that are going on in the world. And, you know, I hate to see people not fulfilling their destiny or not using the skills and the experience and the wisdom, you know, that they have. And this is especially true for seniors, even if people who are retired, there is so much more that you can do, that you can accomplish, that you can overcome, so much more to contribute. And Doug has some great resources that he has spent years, you know, learning about, developing, and has now been sharing with people. There's a lot of, you know, free resources on his website that will be in the show notes. Don't forget his books. Are your books still available on Amazon or through your website or what?
On the website, they can get the digital version for under $5.
Oh, okay. But one is Revolutionize Your Brain, 16 Revolutionary Brain Training Techniques. And I love this title, Do-It-Yourself Brain Surgery, 101 Revolutionary Brain Training Secrets, Strategies, and Skills. So, you know, keep up with his website to see what other resources he'll be making available. And if you ever have a chance to hear him speak, give a presentation in person, by all means, you know, do that. And then his Brain Training for Seniors podcast is currently offered twice a week and just relatively, you know, short, you know, segments. We can learn so much. So, Doug Bench, thank you so much for taking the time to help us learn how our brain works and what we can do to bring some new things into our life. And is there anything you'd like to share in closing? Any other hot tips or anything you'd like to share about your resources?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me on your podcast. Thank you, everybody, for listening. I hope you got some good information. I'll just throw one more thing at you that's based on brain science. How many of you have walked into a room and forgot why you went in there? We all do that. And you know what? Until you learn how the brain works, you blame yourself. Oh, I'm so stupid. I'm getting so old. Senior moment, brain fart. No. That's the way your brain works. Every memory you've had that gets stored first goes into short-term memory. And short-term memory fires for only about 45 seconds before it stops firing unless you put it in long-term memory, because your brain figures out it must not be very important to you because you didn't send it to long-term memory. So if you decide when you're in the bedroom that you got to do something in the laundry room, and you go in the laundry room and you can't remember why, that's normal. Stop beating yourself up. Learn how the brain works and you can make it work better.
Yeah. Well, this is very exciting. And it's one of my very favorite subjects in the whole world, you know, things we've been talking about today. And there's so much more, so much more. And I just want to thank Doug for doing a lot of the heavy lifting and spending all those countless thousands of hours, you know, researching and sort of gleaning the nuggets and the principles for us and bringing them into kind of one place in his books and other materials. And you know, we can all learn so much. So again, Doug, thank you so much
You're welcome.
For your time and expertise. And again, I want to, you know, thank the listeners and, you know, be sure to subscribe, follow, and please send an email to me at sally@astoundyourselfpodcast.com. And let me know what your biggest takeaways from these episodes with Doug have been, because I'm very, very interested. So thank you all, and we'll see you next time.